Welcome to JGL Law for You. This podcast is sponsored by Joseph Greenwald and Lake, a suburban Maryland law firm that has been representing clients throughout D.C., Maryland, Virginia, and across the country for close to 50 years. JGL Law for You is a podcast by lawyers, yes, but not for lawyers only. On JGL Law for You, we will bring you up close and personal with our firm's lawyers and some special guests who will be discussing how to navigate the many legal processes, developments in the law, other current events, and how they may affect you, your family, or your business. Today, we've got a very cool guest. We're talking with Rick Rudman, the co-founder and CEO of Curbio Incorporated. Curbio is a company that fixes up homes before they go on the market so that they sell quickly and for the most money with no payment due until the home is sold. Prior to Curbio, Rick was co-founder and CEO of Vocus, a PR and marketing software company that Rick grew from startup to over 1,500 global employees, an IPO, and eventual sale for $500 million. Rick has worked as a programmer and an accountant, beginning his career with a stint in the U.S. Air Force. Rick graduated from the University of Maryland and the United States Air Force Technical Training School in Biloxi, Mississippi. Over the years, Rick has been recognized for his success as the Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year in the District of Columbia, the High Tech Council of Maryland's Entrepreneur of the Year, and the Maryland Interfaith Works Humanitarian of the Year. Welcome aboard, Rick. Glad to have you today.
Thanks, David. It's great to be here.
Before we start talking about Curbio and the real estate industry and all of that, the question that pokes out at me is this, right? How does a guy go from the Air Force and an accounting career to a $500 million IPO and now into the real estate business? Walk us through that little path that you took.
Yeah, I have to give luck a big part of the credit for that. But, you know, I just kind of followed the things that were interesting to me. So the Air Force definitely gave me more of the technical background that I think led me through the programming and software side of the world. And, you know, the accounting side, I think, was the voice in my head from my dad who said, when you go to school, make sure that whatever you study, this is in the days of the help wanted columns. He said, make sure you get something with a degree where there's a corresponding help wanted column where you can actually get a job. So probably like you, you know, we were kind of steered by others to head towards, you know, lawyers and accountants and a jobs where we knew we could make money, regardless of whether or not they were going to make us happy or not. And so where the accounting came from.
I had to stay away from medicine because I used to pass, and actually still do, pass out whenever I see a needle pointed in my direction. So that was never in my particular wheelhouse. So your dad steered you to accounting, and then that led you somehow from the Air Force into business and into industry, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the real estate stuff was mostly just by chance. I've just viewed it as another business opportunity. So I wasn't specifically focused on real estate, but, you know, come on, everybody loves fixing up homes and selling them, right? It's the HGTV craze, which so many people are involved in the U.S. So really the real estate stuff, again, I think was just more of an opportunity to apply technology. And so I ended up there.
Let's talk about Curbio and what your company does. Let's start there. And then I want to drill down a little bit. But what exactly do you folks do?
Yeah. So here's what I love about the business. I spent a career, you know, selling software to corporations, which is fine. But at the end of the day, you know, you're still trying to convince people to spend money on tools. And it's just about business. So it's not very personal. What I love about Curbio is we basically help people that are going to sell their homes, fix them up first before they go on the market so they can sell them for more money, make more money, and we defer all payment until closing. And the reason we do that is just to make the process as simple as possible, you know, and also to help people that may have a ton of equity in their home, but when it comes time to sell, the real estate agent comes over and they do a little walkthrough, right? This is common on every home. And the agent says, yeah, great. I think we'll be able to sell your home. Here's the list of stuff you need to do to it before we put it on the market. You need to paint it. Depending on the rest of the condition, it may include redoing some hardwood floors. If the home's really old, they may actually suggest you update your kitchen and bathroom. And, you know, a lot of people don't have the cash put aside to do that. And so, you know, they've got a choice, which is to somehow go out and find the money or just kind of sell the house as it is, in which case, you know, they're going to get a lot of bargain hunters and investors that may want to give them a lowball offer. So, you know, that's basically how this business was founded.
Let's walk through it. Okay. So I've got a house that's however old it is, and I've got, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars or some amount of equity in the property. And my agent comes over and he or she tells me, you know, listen, you know, you can't sell it with purple walls and green carpet and this kitchen from 1978. And you need to do A, B, and C to get top dollar for it. I look at her because my eyes start spinning, right? Because I don't have $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 in cash to do whatever it costs to do those jobs. So then I reach out to you, right? So Curbio sends someone over to the house to take a look at it, or what happens from there?
Yeah, great question. First of all, I love your example because, you know, and obviously, you know, we haven't. I didn't send you in examples to use, but what you gave was perfect, right? Like, that's exactly what happens. The real estate agent comes in, and sure, everybody's decorated their home to their personal taste. I got plenty of those dark color painted walls in colors that no one else would probably want if they moved into my home. So, no, that's a great example. And the way it works, you know, there's really two pieces to it. One, I would say, is very, very simple and typical of a standard process where we would look at the home as a general contractor and work with the real estate agent to go over the list of stuff that they say needs to be done. And we'd provide a price quote for it. And if it looks good, we would come in, we would do the work. And the differences between what we do and a traditional contractor relate to certainly payment at closing, which I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about. No out of cash for the seller. The other really big distinction, though, that you hit on is the process. So coming from software and technology for most of my career, we looked at ways to simplify the process for people that need to get a home improvement project done, right? It's an area of business that has not changed in 40 years. And anybody that's done renovation is pretty familiar with the process. You place that call, next thing you've got a contractor or two contractors, if you need two quotes, coming by the home. You got to walk through the home with them. They got to take their measurements. Then the subcontractors come tromping through and they got to measure for carpet, right? It's an ordeal. And what we've done is basically when we get the call, we just ask the customer to upload some photos or videos, or if they don't want to do that, we'll send a camera tech to the home and they do a complete 3D video of the house. From that point forward, we do our whole proposal and all our measurements basically online using those videos and something like what we're doing here today, either a Zoom call or something where we just do it online with the customer. We give them the quote, and if they're ready to go, we come in and start work. So it's very much like a typical general contracting process, other than that and the fact that we only do homes that are going on the market. And so we're very focused on the ROI for the seller, right? This is not about building somebody's dream kitchen. This is about working with the agent and doing those things that are going to get the best price for the home with the minimal amount of work. And so the punchline there is our customers, on average, whatever they spend with us on the renovation, they get double that back in the new listing price, and they make about 100% profit on what they spend on the project.
All right. So let's let's jump ahead and cut to a bit of a chase. So I got to imagine people are asking themselves as they're listening to you, where's the rub, right? Where have a, how are you getting paid? What if the house doesn't sell, or if it sits, how are you protected? Because I got to assume that all these contractors and subcontractors aren't employees of Curbio, that you've got folks and entities that you deal with. So let's talk about how you making any money on this deal, and how you securing yourself.
So, you know, I was really happy to come on the podcast today, and you have not disappointed as the lawyer in you now comes out for your audience.
No, it is a business after all, you know.
No, it's great. And those are good questions, because honestly, we get this, you know, it's kind of, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is too good to be true. So one, let me just tell you, you know, we make profit. So, you know, yeah, we're in business make money, and we make plenty of money. But the way we do it, again, we're a regular general contractor, so our prices are competitive. We do defer payment until closing, so we have to make up that cost, so to speak. But we really just do that through volume. You know, we're doing now hundreds of projects, and we're all, you know, all the projects use the same basic materials, right? If you're selling home, everybody already knows you. I mean, we use the same four paint colors in every home that we do. And, you know, typically white cabinets and some granite countertops. I mean, they look good, but it's a very narrow product selection, because that's what appeals to buyers. And so we make up our margin on volume, really, is where it goes. So that's kind of how we make money, and how we're able to offer the deferred payment terms. On the security side, you know, it's pretty straightforward. And again, probably more for your legal audience, but we take a mechanics lien out, you know, which is what most people do. So, you know, we make sure there's enough equity in the home. We don't care about credit or income, which is really nice, again, for the home sellers. And we don't check any of that. We do verify that there's equity in the home. So we do a title search and a lien search, and make sure there's equity there, and that they're actually the property owners. We do our work, and then we just file a mechanics lien, which, as you know, will show up when it comes closing time, and we're just recorded on the settlement sheet, and we get paid at closing. And you know what? It works great. You know, we've had an occasional problem here or there, but in general, it's worked out very well, and there's really been no problems at all. So it's kind of a win-win for everybody.
For our listeners out there, mechanics lien, in a very short two-sentence summary, is basically a lien against your house, much like your mortgage. When you go to sell your house, right? When you go to sell the house, and the buyer is going to do a title search, they're going to see that lien, just like they're going to see the mortgage that exists on the property. And that lien, like your mortgage, is going to have to be satisfied before you can buy the house that Rick's done the work in, right? I mean, that's basically what you're talking about, right?
And it's really, you know, it's no big deal. But we do ask to get paid before, you know, the home gets sold.
Since this is a legal podcast, just to chip in a little legal piece to this. So you have, I presume you have counsel there at your shop, or you use folks to help you draft the mechanics lien. And also, what about the contract that the sellers are going to sign? Tell us what that looks like a little bit.
Yeah, great. Another great question. So we sign up, you know, a contract with the seller, like most general contractors should do, obviously stating what we're going to do and what we're going to charge for the work. I would say the only things that are maybe a little bit different about our contract than a typical one is, look, we're working with people that have come to us and said, I'm selling my home. I want to do this work before it goes on the market. And so all we ask of our sellers, which is embedded in that contract, is, you know, once we sign the contract and once the rescission period has ended, that we're given access to the home so we can get in and get the project done, and so the home can get on the market and be sold. You know, it's kind of funny, right? Like a lot of issues consumers have is they're worried about their contractor showing up and getting the work done quickly. We're kind of the opposite. We want to get it done as quickly as possible and do a great job so the home sells and we get paid. We have the opposite. We want to make sure that the customer doesn't decide to go on vacation for a month and not give us access to the home, because we're paying again for, we're ordering materials, we're lining up labor, all of that we're paying for until the home is sold. And so all we ask really in our seller's contract is that they don't delay our work in getting things done.
Is there any deal between you and the sellers in terms of the how the house is sold? In other words, the list price, whether the list price has to change, what they have to take that, in terms of an offer, that sort of a thing.
Yeah, that's another. I'm glad you asked that question. We used to actually ask our sellers to reduce the price of the home if it wasn't selling. And again, the thinking was, hey, look, if your home's on the market and it's not moving, we're waiting to get paid for our work. You really need to start reducing the price. We've since removed that. So we now do not require that. And the customer is free to set the listing price with their agent. We found that that works well. Again, they're incentivized to get the home sold. And typically they'll do whatever they need to make that happen. So there is now no restriction on what they list it for. There's no restrictions on listing price reductions. There's no project minimum. Again, it's really just a very straightforward process.
Okay. So another just sort of tangential area, because I work there, unfortunately, a great deal of time is when, you know, parties are divorcing in the midst of divorce, have divorced, or part of their deal is that a house is going to get sold. One of the owner, you're going to have both owners, I presume, sign on their contract with you, right? You can't just do it with one of the two owners. I'm assuming you need both to sign, right?
Correct. Yeah.
So sometimes what happens, you know, in the divorce world, right, is that, you know, one person's more motivated to sell than the other. So you get both parties' signatures on that thing, but the person who's living in the house, as opposed to the spouse or former spouse that's out of the house, isn't in that big of a rush to do it, and they cause delays. They do things that cause the house to take longer to get up, or the house not to sell as fast, or they cause difficulty with a prospective buyer through their agent. Is that just on your end? Is that just a risk that you take, a cost of doing business sort of thing? Or is there some way that you protect yourself in that regard?
Yeah. Well, now your day-to-day work's really coming out. It seems like you've got a lot more stories and insight there than I've heard of. A potentially divorcing couple selling homes. Although I do have to say, it is a source. You know, I would say about 15% of our business does come from people that are divorcing that have agreed to sell the home. Right, just like we get a percentage of properties that are for seniors that are retiring and downsizing. Inherited homes is another category we frequently get. But as it pertains to a divorcing couple, yeah, we do the paperwork with both. And this is an area I'm not even completely up to speed on. You may be ahead of me on that. But I think even in some states, some common law states, even if the spouse is not on the title, we're required to get both of them to sign the sales contract just so nobody contests it down the road. But the issues you're talking about, these things that come up where human nature steps in to cause problems, you know, we do, again, in our contract, we do ask that everyone who's a party to the contract, which is both parties, agree that they're not going to delay the process in any way. And so if for some reason we're locked out of the house, or, you know, somebody is just causing problems in putting the home on the market when it's finished, you know, they would be in breach of our contract at that time. And we would charge interest and penalties, which is usually enough to get people moving. And it's actually one of the reasons, again, most people, including the real estate agent, actually like that, because, again, it keeps everybody kind of honest. They've all signed on at the beginning,
And if there's any delays during the process, we can step in and say, look, we've all agreed to get this sold. If we're delayed here, there's going to be penalties and interest. And so that seems to work pretty well.
It provides some motivation, obviously, if they're concerned. So you're not unfamiliar, it sounds, working with folks in the legal profession, either whether it's in a divorce scenario or even what sounds like more frequently someone who's doing some elder law work or estate planning, who's handling the sale of a home for someone who deceased or an executor of a will of someone who deceased or someone who's going to a nursing home. Something that you've done with some regularity.
All of that. And in addition to that, which again was one of the reasons why I thought this would be an interesting podcast, in addition to that, all of the residential licensing requirements for home improvement. So we deal with various states and various attorneys on construction law and home improvement law. And although we do have an in-house general counsel that's familiar with these, as you know, all of these regulations vary state to state. And so we do frequently reach out to attorneys in various states to get very specific legal advice for local jurisdictions and state jurisdictions.
And for our lawyers out there who do estate planning work and who may, I mean, is it a situation where someone who's in the role that I'm probating Mrs. Smith's estate, Mrs. Smith has a home in wherever, Silver Spring or wherever it might be, or I guess whatever other state that you're in, that lawyer could reach out to you directly, right? To try to see what you might be able to do to help to get the property up and going?
Absolutely. You know, pretty much our only requirement is that there has to be a licensed real estate agent on the deal. We do that, again, it's really a protection for the home seller because we want to have two parties. We want to have the real estate agent giving their advice about what needs to be done to the home to get the best price. And we want us in there talking through all that work and giving a price on that work. So as long as there's a licensed real estate agent, but we're happy to take the first call. And we do get many calls from mortgage companies, from lawyers that are, again, yes, working with estates and elderly couples and divorce couples, because they know that this could be a potential path to solving a lot of problems for a lot of people. So again, look, what we do is great. It does not cost anybody anything, which is what's so great about it and sounds a little bit odd, but we're essentially fixing up this home so everybody can sell it more quickly and make more money. The only people potentially losing would be the flippers or bargain hunters that'll just come in and do it if we don't. And we'd much rather do it so that we make money and the homeowner makes money.
It's an interesting business model, no question about it. Let me shift for just a second. I want to get your thoughts. If all goes well, right? I mean, we're all watching the news about vaccines in the hope that the pandemic recedes over the next 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, whatever it is. And for those of us who do read, try to figure out what might be in the world of real estate. You know, we've got to assume, once certain moratoriums get lifted, there's going to be more bankruptcies. There's going to be more short sales. There may be more houses on the market, less houses on the market. I'm wondering if you have any insight for our listeners in terms of what you see on the horizon relative to the effects of the loosening, the lessening of the pandemic on the real estate market.
Sure. So I know, you've had some other guests on to talk about real estate, and a lot of people are following this data, as do we, because it's obviously a big part of our business. So one, I can tell you, most of the numbers on real estate today are going up, right? The average selling prices are going up, and the listings are actually going up now. The number of homes being sold going up. Everything's going up except for one thing right now, which is really inventory. And this is probably something you've heard or even looked at yourself. So inventory remains a little bit light, which is kind of pushing some of the home prices up. And I think part of that was due to COVID, where, people just don't want to have people walking through their homes, right? And that has, I think, held some people back. If you do put your home on the market today, you're going to get a great price. Even like in the Washington, D.C. area, I mean, average listing price and home sale prices have moved up quite a bit over the last 2 years. And so the housing market overall is doing great. What I see and a lot of others in the industry see is as we hopefully as the vaccine gets out there and people resume to more normal lives outdoors, I do think the inventory will go up and home sales will actually go up even more. The number of homes being sold will go up and it'll be much more active. One other thing I just quickly to address that you mentioned, I do worry about a little bit for consumers. Well, unfortunately, their problems could end up being Curbio's benefit, but, you know, I really don't want to earn it that way. But, you know, if the economy, you know, that's the other variable here, depending on what happens to the economy, if the assistance packages aren't enough or as people get outdoors, if for some reason we just don't recover as quickly as we think, or if people are out of work, you could see more foreclosures, right? Which, as you know, have been stayed in most states. People have deferred rent and mortgage payments. So I do worry a little bit that there's a chance that we would see a lot more of that, a lot more foreclosures, a lot more people not being able to afford their homes. In that scenario, again, it's a shame to have that happen, but we would encourage people at least to come to us so that if their home is going to be foreclosed upon and they need to sell it, let us come in and fix it up so they can get the most money for it, pay off their mortgages. A lot of times, this is a good note also for your audience, if we're brought in, we have seen a number of states, our banks, I should say, be willing to hold off on a foreclosure. And we work with them if they know that we're actually going to fix up the home and it's going to definitely go on the market in a couple months. The banks are willing to wait to get a better chance at getting their money back.
That's excellent to know. Well, I want to thank you, Rick, for joining us today. This has been really great, very informative for me, and I'm sure for the folks that are listening. Let me ask you, if anyone wants to reach out to you, wants to reach out to Curbio, be it potential home sellers, agents, lawyers, brokers, whomever, what's the best way for them to get a hold of you directly or someone in your office to talk more about Curbio and how you might be able to help?
Yeah, the easiest, by far the easiest thing to do is to go to curbio.com and just simply click the, you know, I'd like to get an estimate button. And that really, they'll get a call from someone that'll talk to them about the property and or the client and what we can do for them. That's really the fastest and easiest way to do it.
So everyone's clear, that's curbio.com, and that's the best way to reach Curbio and Rick's company. I want to thank everyone again. Thank you, Rick. It's been great. Thanks to everyone out there for listening in, and hope you join us for our next episode. I'm David Bullitt, and this is JGL Law for You.